Colonel Gray, real one. Where were you born, please?
Casale, in India.
Which year was this?
1st November 1922.
And what did your father do for a living?
What did my father do?
Yes.
He's a regular soldier in the Leicestershire Regiment.
Did you have your education in India or in Britain?
No. I was only in India for about a year old.
Where were you educated in Britain?
First of all, at Wilbury Park Preparatory School, and then in St. John's Beaumont Preparatory School, and then at Beaumont.
What were you doing when war broke out?
I was a student at Beaumont.
Were you old enough to have any special reaction to the news that we were at war with Germany?
Well, I was old enough, I suppose, yes. I'm afraid I was rather a sympathiser with the ideas in those days of National Socialists, but there we are.
So were you dismayed at the news that we were at war?
No, not really. I didn't give talking up and one knew it was time.
Did the war affect you at first, personally, in any way?
Well, I was when war was declared, I was on holiday in the south of Ireland, and we had some difficulty getting back to England because there was evacuation was taking place while we were talking. And the other thing was our house was taken over in Broadstairs by the army as an officer's mess, and so we moved for the war, or my mother moved to Yorkshire to stay with her sister in Ilkley for the war.
Does your family have an Irish background?
Oh yes, I'm an Irishman. They have an Irish passport. All these gentlemen around here are Irishmen.
Which part of Ireland did your family come from?
Mallow. Well, recently from Mallow in County Cork. That's for the law. For a thousand years, I suppose.
Were you in any of the early bombing of Britain by the German Air Force?
Yes, I was. I was at Beaumont, which is near Windsor, and we had quite a few bombs in the grounds of the college.
Anybody injured?
No.
How did you come to be in the army yourself?
Well, I had always intended to join the regular army, hoped to, and I would have gone to Sandhurst in February 1940. But Sandhurst was closed in, I think, December 1939, and so a year later I joined the army my regiment as a private soldier and served as an unpaid acting lance corporal for about a year, I suppose, and then I managed to get to Octu in Dunbar and was commissioned in, I think it was, I remember, August 1942.
How did you get out to India?
I joined my battalion, which was the 7th Battalion of the Leicestershire Regiment, in Middlesbrough, must have been September 1942, and about a month later the whole battalion embarked in Liverpool and went via the Cape and various other places to India.
Did you run into the enemy on the way?
No, you were very lucky. It was at the time that the invasion by the Americans and British First Army of North Africa, and I understand that the U-boats were rushing from one convoy to another, not knowing which one to attack.
What happened to you on arrival in India?
Well, we arrived at Bombay and got onto a small ship and went up to Karachi, where we stayed for about a year. During that year, I went on a number of courses. It was quite normal for a junior officer in those days. And about a year after we got there, we were selected as the only militia battalion and the only non-regular, well, not the only militia battalion to be selected to join the Chintis.
How did the news come to you about being a Chindit?
I can't remember. We knew we were going to join a special operation. I don't think we knew it was called, I think it probably wasn't even called Chindit in those days. But we went to Central Provinces or United Provinces, near Jhansi. And when we arrived there, we pitched up a camp in Jhansi, and shortly afterwards I was told I'd been selected to be one of the animal transport officers of the battalion. We were going to have mules, and quite a number of mules, and horses, and chargers, and those sort of things. And each of the two columns, which the battalion was going to be divided into, needed an animal transport officer. And I went on an 8-week course, and I can't rather know the place, but I think it was called Babu Gar. Or somewhere like that, somewhere near Merritt. While I was there, are you interested?
What type of thing did they teach you then?
Oh, we were teaching all about loading animals and teaching, supervising mules and riding horses, general animal transport knowledge. And I was going to be in charge of quite a number of animals. Can you
tell me any of the specific things they told you about the care of mules or the handling of mules?
Well, I mean, we had to know how to groom the mules, how to clean the hooves of the mules, and discover if they were being sick, and what was wrong with them, and the loads, how we loaded the animals, and how we checked the animals when they were loaded, and so on. Does that give you an answer?
Would you have had vets along with you?
Well, yes, each brigade was going to have a vet. But in fact, when we got into Burma, the vet might be 50 miles away, and we would have no means of communicating with him. Does that make sense?
Yes. Had you previously known anything about horses and mules?
Yes, I've been riding ever since I was a child. It's probably why I was selected for the job.
What did you think of the general training that you had before going into...
Yeah, very good, very thorough, very excellent. Going back to the animal transport episode, training, at the end of my course, just after my 21st birthday, I got jaundice when I was in hospital, in Merritt Hospital, Military Hospital, for quite a long time. I was quite ill. And then I went rejoined the battalion and did most of the training with them. And then on one of the last exercises before going into Burma, I was at the back of a column, the column being all in single file, and I suppose there were 500 soldiers in a column, something like that. And I was right at the back, having looked at all the animals going past, and I was mounting my pony. And in those days, one wore marching boots, army boots, and I got my foot into the stirrup. My groom was holding the pony's head, and he wasn't holding it securely enough, because it took a pace forward, and I got my foot in the stirrup. I lost my balance, kicked the heels of the pony, who went at a gallop, and I was dragged. I left them in the stirrup for about a mile and a half before the pony was stopped, and I was quite seriously damaged in my left leg, and was evacuated to a tented camp. There were only two officers in the hospital. One of them was me, and the other one was the son of the Viceroy of India, Lord Wavell. And I had an amusing time in that ADCs used to fly in from Delhi every day, bringing him chocolate cake, which he was far too ill to eat, and I used to help him out with it. So when I actually came to read, by then this time my column had gone into Burma, they'd flown into Burma, I joined there about 6 weeks after they'd gone into Burma. And in fact, I wasn't terribly fit, to be quite honest. I'd had jaundice, and I'd been dragged by my leg, and that wasn't entirely right. So I was rather a lame horse the whole way through the rest of Burma. Also, the column which I joined had had several incidents on my way in. First of all, a Sten gun had gone out, which had just been issued to the battalion just prior to going into Burma, had gone off and wounded and killed a number of people from battalion headquarters. Also, the column had been ambushed in Burma and had a lot of casualties, including the battalion second in command, was killed. And nearly all the mules that I'd been looking after in training had been lost, and we'd been made up with a lot of Japanese animals and people throw out some other columns.
I don't think we've given the number of the column which you belong to.
The column was number 47 column. The battalion was divided into 47 and 74 columns.
So, when and how did you personally join 47 column in Burma?
I flew in a flying boat from the Brahmaputra to Indore Ji Lick. By this time, the monsoons had started, and apart from the Indore Ji Lick, it was not possible for aeroplanes to land in strips. Previously in the Brahma weather, if we had wounded or sick people to be evacuated, we could clear a strip of the jungle and a light plane could come in and take them out. This is no longer possible because I think I'm right in saying whereas the average rainfall in that part of Burma is about 400 inches a year, the year we were there, I believe it was 900 inches. So I know that was maybe not true, but that's why I was told. So it meant that apart from the people who'd been evacuated by flying boat from Indore Ji Lick, when we started again, any wounded or sick people had to be carried. And of course, the doctor, who was an excellent chap, who called Campbell, who eventually got an OBE, he had absolutely no medical backup. I mean, he couldn't send samples off to have them tested in a laboratory or anything like that. We had a lot of problems. I mean, a lot of it, and it took the average when we were marching on through sometimes mud coming up to one's thigh or one's calf. It took 16 people to carry one stretcher. And we had all sorts of problems on disease. They had beriberi and all sorts of diseases which were unheard of in the British Army since sort of Crimea. And if anybody was wounded or cut in any way, they got maggots on the wounds. And it was really a very depressing time.
What about your own state of health in Burma?
Well, I had very bad dysentery. I was very lucky. As an animal transport officer, I was not really much engaged directly with the enemy. I mean, I was in the sort of support side of the column. But having said that, I don't honestly believe that, as far as I can remember, by the time I was there, my column was really doing very much. We did several ambushes on the railway, but we tended to, because of this problem about getting rid of the wounded and all this sort of thing, we tended to be move from one base to another, rather than doing as much rushing about as other more fit. But morale makes an awful lot of difference. You have the right morale, you can do tremendous things. We had very poor morale in 47 Poland.
You were telling me earlier, before we started taping, that one of the particularly capable officers was lost in that ambush.
Yeah, yes. So I explained to you the layout of the column. The columns were made up. The column I was in, 47 column, was composed of elements of headquarter company and A and B company. And the other column, 74 column, was made up of C and D companies. And 47 column was commanded by a chap who I think was not a very clever commanding officer. I better not go into too many details on that. But he had a very good second in command who should have commanded the other column. But because we had placed in interest a chap called Geoffrey Lockett, who'd been the intelligence officer of Wingate in the first expedition, he was given command by Wingate of the other column. And they had a lot of inspiration and did all sorts of things, which they were, and I think probably the most successful column in the whole brigade. They rushed about and did all sorts of things.
Had you met Wingate or any other VIP before going into Burma?
Yes, I had, on two occasions. Once in the, I was having lunch in the Giant Sea Club, and he was an amazing chap. He came into this room, which was full of all the locals, European locals, and Soviet people, and it was like a... He came into the room, and it was incredible. I mean, I've never sort of encountered anybody quite like him.
In what way?
Well, he was a very inspiring person, just by walking into the room and sitting down to lunch. It was... difficult to describe, but he was a mystic, I suppose. And the other time I met him was when he came and addressed our column just before we were due to go into Burma. I never actually spoke to him. I was a pretty junior officer.
Do you remember him saying anything in the way of trying to boost morale before going in?
Well, I'm sure he did. I wouldn't like to try and remember now what he said, but... he was a very inspiring, little, no doubt about it. He was probably one of the most inspiring people I've ever met.
Coming on to the animals you were in charge of, how did they fare under Burmese conditions?
Well, if I'd had the original animals that I'd trained and brought up and all that sort of thing, I'm sure they would have been very good. But because I had a lot of diseased animals from the Japanese and from other colonies, it was a depressing... equally depressing, and I kind of explained, we had a vet in each brigade, but it was a pretty useless arrangement because he was marching around with the brigade headquarters column and never saw my animals. I don't think he would have done very much if he had.
Because of lack of medicines?
No, well, I mean, say, we might have been, brigade headquarters column might have been 50 miles away from us, and he had no means of getting to us. There were no roads or anything. He couldn't get to us, and he couldn't fly to us.
So how much use to the column were the animals, do you think?
Oh, very good. I mean, they carried our ammunition, our heavy weapons, our food, everything was carried by these animals. Bombs, that sort of thing. You know, viruses, very important. We had to eat... Each column had two big wireless sets. One was the RAF set, manned by RAF personnel, which was controlling the aeroplanes that were coming and supply drop or support us in attacking an objective. The other one was our rear link set. Each of those had four or five mules carrying the batteries and the sets and things like that. And we were carrying a lot of weapons, quite honestly, some of which we knew nothing about. I mean, we'd just been introduced to prior to going into battle. There was a life boy flamethrower, a very awkward load on top of a mule. There was a Piat, I think it was Piat, things for shooting at trains and tanks and things. But nobody had had any training in these weapons prior to they were issued to us at the column before, just before we got on the aeroplane, same as the stem guns. We had a lot of equipment was produced to us just before we got into, onto the aeroplane. The other thing was American carbines, which were extra weapons. It was easy to work out how they worked. We had American automatic rifles, and they were called Gavins, I'm not sure, I can't remember. They were quite easy to work out, but all of these other weapons which we were carrying, frankly, I don't think anyone had any training in them, to get the state.
Did you personally come close up with the Japanese whilst on the combat?
Yes, yes. We ambushed when I was going up to from Indorji Lake onto the high ground up north of them in Indorji Lake. We caught a Japanese platoon, and quite a lot of fighting went on. We captured a number of prisoners, but they were very difficult chaps to actually get in touch with.
What happened to the prisoners?
Oh, they marched with us, and in many cases they died on the way, like a lot of other people. They were treated quite normally, they just became part of the corps. They weren't, I can't remember, but I think we perhaps kept one Japanese prisoner out with us when we left.
What about casualties inflicted on the column by the Japanese? Were there many of those?
Yes, quite a number, including two officers who had originally been in my B company with me. One was a chap called Captain Da Costa, who was wounded in the tummy, and poor chap, he took about 3 weeks to die. And the other was a fellow called Bill Morris, who was a fellow, had been a fellow platoon commander with me in B Company. He was also wounded in the tummy, but I mean, nothing much could be done about it. And they poor chaps just were carried about and eventually died.
You were telling me earlier, before we started taping, about the problems caused by having to carry stretcher cases.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, particularly in the sort of in the monsoon period, where often the mud was up to one's calves, it took. Progress was very slow anyway. If you were cutting your way through a bamboo jungle with fairly exhausted chaps, you would remember that each of them were carrying 5 days' rations on their backs, apart from a whole lot of other things. It took, on average, about 16 soldiers to carry one stretcher. They wasn't all the time, but they would, each team of four people could only go so far. And they were carrying not only the wounded man or sick man, but they were carrying his 5 days' rations and their own 5 days' rations. And we were carrying four Bren gun magazines loaded, and 100 rounds of ammunition, and four grenades, by my variety. So the chaps, before he came to carrying a stretcher, was pretty heavily laden. Does that make sense to you?
Yes. You were telling me earlier about some jeeps, which...
When we eventually, after the column had been in for about 5 months, we were withdrawn because the Chinese and the 36th Division had come down and leveled with us, driving the Japanese south. We marched to Mogong, and Mogong was on the railway line to Michinar. And Mogong, there was this American railway operating, which consisted of the open railway tracks being drawn by jeeps, which had railway engine, I suppose, wheels on. And because the Chinese were completely, the Chinese troops were completely ill-disciplined, they were trying to catch these trains. And so when we got to Mogong area, we had to go out about 10 miles to the railway side of Mogong and ambush the trains, get on, come back, pick up the column, and then go on back. And these sort of flat, open cars brought by these jeeps. They're efficient. Right, I think they always found them extremely good on the logistics side. And unfortunately, the final score of our column was that when we were on the train, it was hit by another train, and a number of people were killed there. And just prior to getting on the train, we had another unfortunate incident that in the area of the regimental aid post, the sort of encampment around the regimental aid post, one soldier pulled a grenade, which he should have been taken away from him, of course, out of his pack or where he had it, and put it on his chest and blew himself apart and injured not other people. And the other thing was that there was a fire going outside the regimental aid post, and somebody chucked some ammunition on it, and then that one ammunition round went off and caught a very nice, wonderful chap on his the end of his one of his private parts, just blew up and hit him. So morale didn't tend to be terribly good in 47 Corps.
What do you think drove this chap to commit suicide?
I really wouldn't know. I can probably give you the name of the doctor, who probably know. And he's got detailed notes of all these things, I think. I believe he's still alive.
So the Chinese troops were commandeering the rolling stock illegitimately.
Oh yes, that's entirely. It was operated by the Americans, and it was allocated to us. And if we hadn't got captured the train, we understood that the Chinese might have commandeered it themselves, and it must have been lost to the British forces, or American forces.
But was there a shootout between the Western?
No. We avoided all that by. I think some other previously other columns must have had that sort of problem, because otherwise we wouldn't have been instructed to do it.
Were you at all responsible for imposing discipline in the column whilst it was in Burma?
I suppose unofficially, yes. I mean, General Wingate allowed people to be flogged for various offences, and that was carried out by the commanding officer or the head of the column. Well, not he didn't carry it out, but he ordered it. And sometimes one would do it unofficially oneself.
For what kind of misdemeanours?
Well, my soldiers were the military.